Hello, this is the Trimmed Down podcast version of Tracks of My Life with me, Toby Davey. To catch all my guests' music tracks in full, do listen in to the hour-long version on RNIB Connect Radio every Tuesday at 7 p.m, repeated Thursdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 8 p.m. Hello, I'm Toby Davey and welcome to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio. In Tracks of My Life, we invite a guest to select a few tracks that mean something to them and mark moments in their life. From maybe that first track they ever heard, right through to one track that they would like to pass on that might give hope for the future. My guest this week is Tommy McAnulty, who had a very enjoyable career in the Merchant Navy before losing his sight overnight in November 1983. Tommy has just retired from a very successful and fulfilling career in the sight loss sector, first with Open Sight in Hampshire and then 12 years as Senior Regional Manager at the Macular Society. Hello Tommy and welcome to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Okay, thanks very much Toby for inviting me on today, that's great. I've got to watch when I say Toby because my guide dog Toby is lying next to me as well.
So, Tommy, how did you find it selecting your tracks then?
I found it quite difficult, actually, to get the right things. And I was just a bit worried in case it wasn't right. But, yeah, once I got there in the end, I thought, yeah, that's... And it was just nice to go through my life again as well. And it brought back fond memories and difficult memories as well as good memories.
And your first track, Tommy, takes you back to childhood memories growing up in Clydebank. What was childhood life like for you back then?
I was very fortunate. I was actually fostered as a child and brought into a beautiful family, myself and my brother. And we were both fostered and we just had so many good times. And that's why I remember Clydebank with fondness, with a family that took us in and gave us loads of love. And we just had a beautiful childhood from a very caring family. And Clydebank is on the bank of the Clyde, and I still live by a river now here in Southampton, and I was at sea, so the water has a lot, very important in my life. And I go back as often as I can, but I do enjoy going back to Scotland, and I always go back to Clydebank and just go down memory lane.
What is a track that takes you back to those childhood memories on the Clydebank, and why have you chosen it?
It's because of the banks of the Clyde, and it just reminds me of Scotland as well as Clydebank, and my heart's still partly up there, but the weather's down here. So that's the reason. It's a lovely song. Yeah, I just like it.
I sing o'er river, I'm happy beside the song.
Song of the Clydebank there by the Alexander Brothers, and childhood memories for you, Tommy. Your next track, Tommy, that you have chosen, it marks a time of your life in the Merchant Navy. As a young boy, what made you want to join the Merchant Navy?
My brother-in-law was in the Navy, he was married to my sister Isabel, and he always came back and he talked about the different countries, and he always brought gifts back and, earned money and what have you. And I just thought, no, that sounds like a good idea. And quite honest with you, when I was 16, I think, gosh, it was quite adventurous when I look back now and speak to a 16-year-old now, and I was just so young. But yeah, I went off down to college in Gravesend in Kent and National Sea Training College. And I did a crash course in catering for 3 months. And then you got your books. And then you went off to sea. And my first trip to sea in 1969 was round the world. I mean, it was just fantastic for a 16-year-old. I joined the ship in London. When I was at college, I met another chap from Glasgow. And we decided to ship out together rather than do it on our own. And when we went down to join the ship, lo and behold, there were some others there from college as well. So there was quite a few of us, because on that ship, they took 20 catering boys. So we went on there. So it was just great. What an adventure. And we went off to Australia, New Zealand, via South Africa, Cape Town and Durban, and up Tabletop Mountain on the cable car. And then we came back through the Panama Canal. Yeah, it was just, all the way around the world, 3.5 months. It was just fantastic. So yeah, I did three of those trips. We came home and you'd have a couple of weeks at home and then the ship would go out again. So yeah, that was my first year at sea.
And was the Navy, Merchant Navy sort of training, was it quite rigorous and quite regimented, as one might say?
Not so much as the Royal Navy. The Merchant Navy was a bit more laid back, and as they went into catering. So for the first couple of years, you were like the catering boys. You were the call me waiter, call me this and call me everything. And then when you became 18, you became a rating then, and then you were a steward. And so I worked in the restaurant. And then some of the ships, I worked in cabins as well. And you met some incredible people. From all over. When I was, I worked on one ship, and I remember saying to my mum when I flew out, as it's for 3 months, and I flew to Fiji via Australia to join the ship. I said, if it was any good, I'll stay for six. I didn't come home for 18 months. I just loved it. And I was based out in Sydney in Australia, and we just cruised around the Pacific every 2 weeks. We were around to Fiji and Tonga and places like that. Yeah, and then I sailed back with the ship and then went back out again with it. So, yes, that was the Ocean Monarch. It was a lovely ship and good times. So you worked hard, but you played hard as well. And in those days, the ships used to stay in port longer, the cruise ships. So, yeah, so when we were in Sydney, we used to get the ship all cleaned up. And then we would go out and hit the town that night, have a good time. And then start all over again. The new passengers would come on the following day and off you go for another fortnight.
And the track that takes you back to those Merchant Navy days is that classic Rod Stewart track, Sailing.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, it's very appropriate. And it just, again, it reminds me of those happy days on the ships.
I am sailing. I am sailing.
That classic Rod Stewart track there, Sailing, and memories of your Merchant Navy life for you, Tommy. Your next track, Tommy, takes you to a time partying on the cruise ships. And I wondered what, you know, I think you've maybe mentioned a bit of the partying earlier, but
yeah.
What were there really good times?
Partying on the ships, yeah, as I said earlier, we worked hard, but we played hard as well. And we just go to places like New Orleans, and you would go, you know, down Bourbon Street to the piano bars there, and gosh, you were there half the night, and then you come back and still able to get up and serve breakfast the following morning. And because obviously you're younger, you've got the energy and things like that. And in fact, it was very difficult to pick a song because it was in the 70s. I was in my 20s, and we were just out there full of energy. And having a good time. But on the ships as well, it wasn't just going ashore. On the ships, we all had a good time as well. We used to have the crew bar, which was called the Pig and Whistle. And we used to have a lot of theme nights in there. So, yeah, they were great fun as well. We'd have a Hawaiian night or something, and they would do the bar up, all sort of Hawaiian stuff, and you'd get into costume and things like that. We had fancy dress nights, we had race nights. So there was lots going on there just for the crew. And it was good fun, and it was really hard to pick a song because, you know, I was thinking of Boney M. That reminded me of Harvey Wallbanger parties and things like that. And for me in the 70s, there was a lot going on, and obviously I remember, you know, Brotherhood of Man winning Eurovision Song Contest. I was working on a ship that was going around the coast then of the UK, and it was hard to pick a song there, but that's why I went for the, you know, Saturday Night Fever. I thought that was quite good.
And obviously you enjoyed life on board the ships, and was it sort of very regimented kind of life? I know you say it's not like the Royal Navy, but there's also sort of a pattern to life, isn't there?
Oh, yes. I mean, as I said, we worked 12 hours a day. And it was 7 days a week because there was nobody there to come and cover for you. And But it didn't seem like work a lot of the times. It just seemed you were having a good time. The passengers were enjoying themselves. And I remember once somebody said, oh, did you have to work for Christmas? And I said, I used to love Christmas working, and especially in the restaurant, because everybody was having, you know, wanting a good time. You were having a good time. So, yeah, it was quite regimented. I mean, it was, you know, you had to be up every morning and what have you and get cracking. But, you know, it was enjoyable. And, yeah, I just loved my time in the Merchant Navy.
Night Fever, the classic Bee Gees disco track there. Tommy, your next track marks a time, I think, when you lost your sight overnight in November 1983. Was it a real sort of life-changing moment for you?
Without a doubt. I went to shore in Trinidad. I was on a ship and we were out celebrating my 31st birthday. And the next day I woke up and I couldn't see anymore. And it was just awful. But at the time, obviously, I didn't think it was going to be permanent. You just thought this thing's going to go away. And they quickly got me off the island and I was flown back home. A dear friend of mine, she met me in London and brought me back to Southampton, where I live. And we went to the eye unit there. And they detected that it was cyanide poison and had affected my optic nerve. And the only person who dealt with that in the whole of the UK at that time, as you say, in 1983, was a Professor Folds in Glasgow, where I'm from. So the consultant down here was communicating with him up there. And then he said, well, they want you to go up and see it. So I went away up to Glasgow and went and seen the professor, and he was going to do all sorts of tests. But after the first day, he just phoned and said, come in and see me tomorrow. And I went in and he said, the damage is done. There's nothing we can do for you. And I was just devastated. My sister Isabel was with me at the time. And, you know, I just felt lost. So I came back to Southampton and I was struggling a bit with it. I mean, one day I would think, yeah, I've cracked this. I know what I'm doing. Next minute I was down in the dumps. I drank too much as well. That didn't help any, just to try and get away from what was really happening in my life. So I didn't really want to face up to it at the time. And so that was a bit of denial. And then I went off down to, there was a manor house in Torquay run by the RNIB. And when I look back, I mean, I must have been a nightmare because I went down there. And when I arrived, they said, oh, you've got to be in for 10 o'clock at night. I thought, my goodness, that's when I used to go out. I used to come back in. And I thought, the nightclubs don't close until 2 o'clock in Torquay. And so I was rebelling a bit there when I look back. And yes, I did. I went nightclubbing it and I'd come back in, fire escapes and God knows what else. Not the best thing for a blind man to do. And so I was there for 3 months. And it was a fantastic place because it was an assessment for work. And also a bit of rehab. So you're away from family and friends. So you really just had to get on with things. And again, meeting other people who were visually impaired helped a great deal as well. I think peer support is so important. We learn so much from each other. And then had another couple of years and just get back together and I knocked a drink on the head. And then I went back to Torquay the second time. And I was a model student. And away down there, I was typing away, I was brailing away, and I was, you know, tucked up in bed for 10. And I knew what I wanted out of Torquay because I'd been there before. So the second time, I made sure I got what I wanted. And shortly after leaving there, I went off to RNIB Loughborough College for 2 years. I went up there, and it was fantastic up there. I got loads of qualifications and I actually built up my confidence as well academically. And so that was great. But not only academically, but they taught you interview skills as well, what to be prepared for as a visually impaired person at interviews. And I think that was so important. So that helped to build up my confidence after, you know, the knot that I had, and to find myself again, because I'd lost myself for a little while. I didn't know who I was. And because people think you just lose your sight, they don't realize that you lose your career, you know, you lose your income. There's a whole lot of things. And for a while, I lost myself. I didn't know who Tommy was anymore. But when I refound myself again, I bounced back. And now I'm far more qualified than I ever was when I could see. So, you know, it's I had to use my brain a bit more. And, you know, the RNIB training that I got in both those places was excellent. And because I hadn't a clue what was out there for a visually impaired person. I had no idea what I was capable of doing. So the retraining did help me.
And the track that you have chosen that marks this time in your life is probably slightly ironic to some people. What is the track and why have you chosen it?
Well, coming out of the darkness, because it was coming out of a dark place that I was in my time of my life. And it was just, there was a light at the end of the tunnel, and I felt it start to shine on me. And that was me build my confidence, come back. My life had come back, but differently, as a struck person, really, through what I'd been through.
Spend each and every moment searching what to believe. Coming out of the dark, I finally see the light now, and it's shining on me.
Gloria Estevan there, and Coming Out of the Dark. Tommy, your next track is one for some of the people who you have sadly lost due to HIV. Are you happy to maybe talk about some of the people that you have lost in a way of celebrating their life?
Yes. Sadly, you know, in the 90s and the early noughties, I had some friends who I'd sailed with, and two of them from Glasgow. And sadly, they had HIV. And I always remember one of my friends, he said, well, I've got it, there's not much I can do. I used to go to self-help groups with him, make sure there's anything I could do so that I could help. And he said, well, I've got it, I've just got to get on with things. And he just made the best of what time he had left in his life. So yeah, there was two dear friends, and I remember them with fondness. And we had some fantastic time. We used to go partying and clubbing and what have you together. So, yeah, and one of them, Bernie especially, he used to come down to Southampton. He'd fly down because he had a lot of friends that lived down here that he'd sailed with. I always remember once he came down here and he said, oh, Tommy, I'm not feeling too good. I need to get back home. So we phoned the Southampton airport, and they had a plane leaving within a couple hours. And he says to me, oh, he says, there's a flight there. He said, I'm going to catch that. And we couldn't get a taxi. So I said, we'll just take the hired car that he'd hired from a friend of mine who ran a garage. And so I said, well, I'll come with you, but we'll just leave the car at the airport and we'll sort it out. Don't worry, just get on that plane. And I jumped on the car with him, and I had two dogs with me, and my first guide dog, Otis, and my retired dog, Lloyd. And we all jumped in the car and just stopped outside the airport. He ran in to get, you know, but turned on the flight and everything, got there in time. And suddenly I thought, oh God, I'm sitting here with the car keys and two guide dogs with me. What did I do is I quickly phoned my friend to come and rescue us, because he lived quite nearby, the chap who we had hired the car from. And Bernie got home and he felt safe up there because they could look after him. So yeah, I mean, you know, some friends of mine and Bernie especially, he loved this song, you know, Reach. And he just loved partying. And I just remember him with fondness with that song in the nightclub. And we used to get up and bop around to it. And it was just lovely. And two lovely chaps. And I know there's lots of people out there who've lost people through that. But these were two dear friends of mine that I lost. But it's good now that they've got a lot more going on to help people with HIV.
We got to all stick together. Never ever forget that I got you and you got me. So reach for the stars.
Press Club 7 there and Reach. Tommy, your next track marks the time that you say you finally found love. Did it take you a long time to find love? And do you think that your visual impairment affected your search for love at all?
Well, yeah, because, I mean, as when I was younger, I mean, it was just very carefree and never really bothered so much about, you know, needing somebody in my life as such. And I was up and down gangways, on and off ships and what have you. And then when I lost my sight, I was sort of lost for a little bit. And then when I rebuilt my life, I was so busy rebuilding my life and my career. So as I say, when I left Loughborough, I then got a job with the local society for the visually impaired and Open Sight, which used to be called the Hampshire Association for the Blind. And I worked hard at building up my career. I learnt the trade from other colleagues, volunteers, other visually impaired people. And I worked for them for 16 years, and I was doing benefits. Then I was an eye clinic liaison officer for 3 years. And that was a wonderful job because I could help people in the eye unit and with the consultants do a wonderful job medically, but they don't have the time to sit and listen to people and help people and tell them what's out there. So I was linked from the healthcare to social care. And then for the last 12 and a half years, I worked for the Macular Society, setting up support groups, and peer support is really important for each of us. And so I think I just put all my time and effort into work and building my career and enjoying everything I did, all the different roles I did. And enjoyed that, but never. I remember one person saying to me, "This is probably you're too busy to have a relationship." but finally, I did. I bumped into. I met Paul, and we met on the internet. So we think we're quite modern. And we met in 2012, and I did give time for myself and a relationship, and it's just fantastic, and I just love it, and I just feel very lucky that. We've got each other, and we've got the same interests and things like that. We're both just retired recently, and we've got time now to go and catch up with friends and do whatever we like and go wherever we like. And we're very fortunate to have our health and that kind of thing. And he loves my guide dogs as much as I do. I'm on number 4 guide dog, and. I got my first one in 1990, Otis, and then I got Lloyd, and Otis retired when he was 11. Lloyd retired at 9 and a half. Then we got Brunel, the cheeky one, and Brunel was nearly 12 and he retired. And then we got Toby, who's the current boy at the moment, and he's 5 and a half. So yeah, so I feel now I've got a family and I'm happy with that. And we, I love all his family, and his family love me, and my family love Paul, and it's just lovely. We're just part of a big family now, and we're going to get married next year, and we should have got married last June, then we postponed it to this June, and now it's going to be next June, and it'd be lovely for both of our families to get together and get to know each other. They know a lot about each other on social media and things like that. But it'll be lovely for them to meet as well. And so that was a belated 60th birthday present, Paul was.
Ollie Mayer's there and The Army of Two, and a track that marks your life with Paul, I think, as well. Before we come on to your final track, Tommy, I just wanted to sort of ask, I know, as you said earlier on, you've had a career mainly in the sight loss sector, and I wondered mm-hmm. whether working in the sight loss sector was a way of perhaps giving something back to all that support and help you got when you lost your sight.
Yeah, I mean, I got lots of support from the local society, guide dogs, RNIB, and yes, I feel very fortunate Because I think no matter how old you are, how much sight you lose, you do need that support at the beginning, and you need to, you know, get your hand held and just, you know, some guidance and what have you. And I grabbed all of that. It was available at the time. So now, over the years, it was great to be able to put that back and give back what I'd been given. And yeah, I was very fortunate to work with so many other visually impaired people and met some cracking people over the years, some volunteers, both sighted and visually impaired. And they're still friends now. I keep in touch with a lot of people that I've met during my working career. And it's just been lovely and incredible people. I mean, there was one lady, she was 90. She was running one of the local support groups here in Hampshire. And she says to me, "Oh, Tom," she says, "I want to abseil off Spinnaker Tower." And that's, you know, a tower in Portsmouth, which I've obviously never seen. And then I made some inquiries. It's higher than Big Ben, which I remember how high that was, and Blackpool Tower. And I said, "Yeah, okay, no problem." Never thought any more of it. And then, you know, I was in the office. Somebody said, "Oh, Betty's been on the phone. She's got the go-ahead from her GP. Can you arrange for her to abseil off Spinnaker Tower?" And before I knew where I was, there I was, standing in Spinnaker Tower with this lady. And she said to me, "How do you feel?" And I said, "I feel a bit nervous." She said, "Well, if you freeze halfway down, I'll come back down and talk you down." And I thought, she is just, and so I've met so many inspirational people, you know, in their 80s, 90s, incredible, incredible people. And like me, they took at the beginning, they needed that help at the beginning, but they were given back by doing a little bit, either running the local group or even just meeting and greeting somebody at the group. And it was great to give back what I'd been given all those years ago. And as I said many a time, peer support is wonderful. We learn so many tips from each other.
Now, Tommy, we come to your final track, the one that you would like to pass on that might give people hope for the future. What is the track and why have you chosen it?
Well, Amazing Grace, I've picked that one because some of the words in there jump up at me all the time. And it says, "Where I was blind, but now I can see. And yes, I was blinded visually, but now I see life different." And I always remember somebody saying when I was training as a counsellor, "So, well, you won't see, body movements and things like that." And I said, "Yeah, but I won't be judgmental," because as we all know, if you're sighted, you see somebody coming in the door, you're already making judgments on that person. Where I wasn't, I was listening to how that person came across to me. So I see things now differently, not visually, but I see it as people get how they are to me. And that's the important thing, not what they look like. Because when I first lost my sight, yes, I asked, "What does this person look like, that person look like?" And that was the important part. Not now, is how that person comes across to me. So that's some of the words that jump up at me. And also where it says, "I was lost and then was found." And yes, I was lost. When I first lost my sight, I didn't know who I was anymore. But my God, did I find myself. And when I did, I'm much happier with myself and feel very lucky that I'm content with my life and who I am. But that's thanks to a lot of people as well that's made me who I am today.
Well, thank you, Tommy McAnulty, very much for sharing your Tracks of My Life with me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
No, my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me. And it's been good. Mm-hmm.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch.